Welcome to the Rob Four Show, where I bring you the latest politics, news, and analysis with a dash of progressive perspective. Thank you very much for tuning in. Let's get informed. Okay, it is Wednesday, August 19th, and this first story is going to trigger any Trumpists in my audience, so I apologize for that. But let me clarify now by saying that, yes, America meddles in other countries' elections, and other countries meddle in ours, but that does not mean that these levels of meddling are equal. For example, right now we know that Russia has an interest in keeping Trump the president of the United States, while China and Iran have an interest in getting Biden elected to the presidency. Those things are not equal, though, because we know Russia meddles with great organization and meticulousness, and that their meddling scheme was ordered by the highest levels of government, that is to say, Vladimir Putin. With all that out of the way, we have to talk about the Senate's report on Russian meddling into the 2016 election. So this story is not about what's happening now, but about what happened in 2016. So yesterday, the Senate released its fifth and final volume of the report on Russia's 2016 election meddling, which goes further than the Mueller report in showing the Trump campaign's connection to Russia. So, what does it say? Well, some of the big takeaways are, one, Paul Manafort, Trump's former campaign chair, worked on pro-Russia influence operations in 2004 for Ukrainian oligarchs. The Senate committee wrote of Manafort, "Taken as a whole, Manafort's high level of access and willingness to share information with individuals closely affiliated with the Russian intelligence services, particularly Kalimnik and associates of Oleg Deripaska, represented a grave counterintelligence threat." Two, during the campaign of 2016, then-candidate Trump and other campaign officials sought to obtain advance information about WikiLeaks' release of damaging emails of Roger Stone, from Roger Stone, rather, who they believed had inside information, Axios says. The report also found that Trump spoke with Roger Stone about WikiLeaks on multiple occasions, even though Trump claimed he had no recollection of it during a written response to special counsel Robert Mueller. Julian Assange, founder of WikiLeaks, has denied it, but the Senate committee also found that there was significant evidence showing WikiLeaks collaborating with Russian government officials. 3. Donald Trump Jr. went to Trump Tower in 2016 expecting to get damaging information from a government official, but no information was ultimately transmitted. So Trump Jr. tried to get damning information from Russia, but failed here. 4. Michael Cohen, Trump's personal lawyer, reached out directly to the Kremlin to solicit the Russian government's assistance about building a Trump Tower in Moscow. So, with that, the 3-year investigation by the Senate is complete after hundreds of interviews and millions of pages of documents. This is the latest and likely final news on the matter. Though, per Axios, the committee said it was limited in some aspects of its investigation by assertions of executive privilege, including by members of the Trump transition team. From Senate Intelligence Members Republican Marco Rubio, he said, "We can say, without any hesitation, that the committee found absolutely no evidence that then-candidate Donald Trump or his campaign colluded with the Russian government to meddle in the 2016 election." But Democrat Mark Warner noted, "At nearly 1,000 pages, Volume 5 stands as the most comprehensive examination of ties between Russia and the 2016 Trump campaign to date, a breathtaking level of contacts between Trump officials and Russian government operatives that is a very real counterintelligence threat to our elections. This cannot happen again." Okay, next we have to talk about the destruction and tragedy going on in Iowa. The Washington Post says hurricane force winds gusting up to 112 miles per hour in the rare Derrico storm flattened 37 million acres of crops and damaged many homes and businesses, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. "We're now a week after this horrible storm, and thousands in Iowa remain without power. Corn and soybean plants lie bent and broken in the fields, And anger is rising among residents who say state officials and Republican Governor Kim Reynolds did not seek aid quickly enough in this powerful storm's aftermath. The hurricane-like event happened on August 10th, and Kim Reynolds waited nearly a week to formally ask for $4 billion in federal disaster relief for the thousands of businesses, farms, and individuals who lost their livelihoods. We see this stuff all the time throughout every level of government. We have to vote these people out who have no interest in actually governing. Waiting a week in this situation is unconscionable. Okay, so earlier this week on Monday, the United States added 42,000 brand new COVID-19 cases, and New Zealand added 9. Not 9,000, not 900, but 9 single cases of COVID-19. And Trump had something to say about this to his supporters in Minnesota. Quote, "In fact, even New Zealand, do you see what's going on in New Zealand? They beat it. They beat it. It was like front page. They beat it. Because they wanted to show me something." By the way, I have to note here, Trump is making this about himself for some reason, as if it's not like a genuine public health crisis. But going on, he said, "The problem is, big surge in New Zealand, so you know it's terrible. I wanted to give you that comparison of 42,000 compared to 9, before Trump's obvious lie here. But Prime Minister of New Zealand, Jacinda Ardern, did respond to these comments at a press event. Have a listen.
Obviously, I don't think there's any comparison between New Zealand's current cluster and the tens of thousands of cases that are being seen daily in the United States. Obviously, every country is experiencing its own fight with COVID-19. It is a tricky virus, but not one where I would compare New Zealand's current status to the United States. Look, I think for anyone who's following COVID and its transmission globally, will quite easily see that New Zealand's 9 cases in a day does not compare to the United States' tens of thousands, and in fact does not compare to most countries in the real world. I'm not concerned about people misinterpreting our status.
Lastly, Postmaster General Louis DeJoy has been called to testify in front of the Senate this Friday. I told you about his hearing in front of the House next week yesterday, but now he will testify in front of both the House and Senate. It appears all this pressure did something, though, because the Wall Street Journal reports that the USPS is to suspend changes until after the election. So in a statement, DeJoy announced he was suspending the changes to avoid even the appearance of any impact on election mail. These changes include stopping the removal of mail drop boxes, cutting store hours, cutting worker overtime, and telling postmen and women to leave mail if it wasn't out by a certain time for the day. The Guardian writes, DeJoy also announced on Tuesday he was expanding an election mail task force with officials across the country. The Postal Service is ready to handle whatever volume of election mail it receives this fall, he said. It's going to be interesting to see what happens in these upcoming hearings, and I will keep you posted on the USPS crisis here on The Rob Ford Show. If you're interested in Democratic National Convention coverage, I'm back on Twitch tonight and tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern at twitch.tv/Rob4.
That's all for today. Thank you for tuning in. If this show brings you value, please consider supporting me on Patreon for as little as $2 at patreon.com/Rob4. That's patreon.com/ROBFORE. Also, please make sure you're subscribed wherever you're listening to this so you don't miss an episode. Have a great rest of your day. I'll see you tomorrow.